Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program, where we discuss the issues of the day with a panel of invited guests, joined today by Yas Agar, Rosalind Scott-Gibb, and of course Nathan Thomas. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page, if you wish to leave a post, is Talk Radio Europe Official. We're going to be speaking Dynatapes a little bit later on, but first I thought we would have a look at the trade situation between the UK in these final months before Brexit. Who wants to kick the ball rolling on the trade deficit or the trade deals? Nathan, your thoughts so far?
Well, we had an interesting discussion last week about the chlorinated chicken. It was, as far as I'm concerned, primarily an example of how difficult these trade deals are going to be. Now, again, a journalist writing the story or telling the story on television is going to find something like chlorinated chicken as an example of the problems that the negotiators are going to come up against. This week it's apparently Scotch whiskey, which has certain, within the EU, certain controls over what can be called Scotch whiskey. As we all know from different foods and so on, you can't call this something because it has to come from a certain area or be made a certain way or whatever. Again, in the U.S., and we're talking about the U.S.-UK possible trade deal that they're already talking about, Scotch whiskey is defined differently, and the Scotch whiskey brewers of the United States are, of course, going to want to send their Scotch whiskey over to Scotland, I guess. But the point is, it is different countries have different rules for all sorts of items, and you know, the chicken and the chlorine and the rule about how much or how long the scotch has to be in the barrel before it can be sold and so on. I mean, those are fascinating things for people. But almost every item that countries are talking about trading with each other, deals like that have to be worked out. Your rules for making steel are such and such for your country. Ours are different. How do we work together so that we are not creating a problem, and no, you won't let me import this, I won't let you import that. That's why these deals are so complicated.
Yeah, so your thoughts on where we stand with the trade deals?
Well, like for the Brexiteers, the pro-Brexit people, I guess being able to still strike trade deals for the next 3-4 years with the EU is going to be probably it's going to raise some. Not happiness, basically, for people who are pro-Brexit. And the trade deals between UK and US, well, there again, we have, Donald Trump, who's, basically saying, because he said, that there's a very powerful trade deal that's going to happen with the UK, which is good to calm down the fear of Britain leaving the European Union.
Of course, Donald Trump has also said America first, and he has done nothing but complain about the horrible trade deals that America has made, and we have been too easy on everybody, and everybody is flooding their things into our country, and we are importing from everybody, and that we're going to stop. It's going to be America first, which goes exactly opposite what he said, it'll be a grand trade deal. Well, if you follow Donald Trump, it'll be a grand trade deal for America, but it won't be for whoever they're negotiating with.
But that's the problem, because now, the UK will eventually be flooded with things like chlorinated chicken, fuel-pumped hormone, the beef, monkey with, with steroids.
Well, if they allow it. Now, in the trade deal, they can say, no, you can't. We will not accept American chicken, which is perfectly fine, except then the U.S. will say, all right, we will not accept U.K. something or other. I don't know what, you know, what the item would be, but if you start banning things from whatever country you're dealing with, and again, the UK is going to have to do this with a whole lot of different countries. This is the plan. Oh, we'll just make deals with everybody. Well, it's fine, but these deals are very difficult because everybody is fighting in their own interest. It's not to be easy trade with the UK. Sure. It's easy trade for what we want to send you, but we don't want you flooding our market with stuff that we don't want.
But that's the thing. But now we're not being able to trade in the EU freely, then costs will – free trade has its advantage.
Of course it does.
This is something that unfortunately, you know, they'll pay the price eventually, you know, unfortunately, the taxpayer, the everyday person.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRA. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, everybody. Sharon Ali Chanti.
Good morning, Sharon.
Hello. There was a bulletin put out this morning by the UK government is now saying that EU subsidies are not going to be sustainable for farming and fishing. They've promised to subsidise the farmers until 2020, but it looks as though they are going to go. Now, I once saw a documentary about New Zealand doing away with its farming subsidies, and it took several years, and the farmers suffered greatly. They got through it, and things are okay now, but the farmers had to spend a lot of money that they hadn't got, in other words, getting into debt, by diversifying. They really had to look at other ways of earning a living. So good luck to the farmers, many of whom voted out, and the fishermen too. The second thing they said they were going to do, I can't believe this, they must already know, surely, about that they were going to do this study on immigration. Sure, they're going to do a study, would you believe this, on chlorinated chicken. I mean, I ask you. So it looks as though they're going to try and lower standards where they can, although they've said they won't. And the third thing that worried me is they're going to dip into pension funds to pay for startups. Now, we all know what happens when governments dip into pension funds. The people who are entitled to them at the end of the day have to make major sacrifices. So I think there's some quite worrying things there to think about. And again, a lot of us have said that the people who voted, some of the people who voted out will be the ones to suffer, but of course they won't say anything because they won't want to lose face. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thank you for that, Sharon. And we've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, hi, it's John from Islington.
Thanks for holding.
I mean, no problem. Just to say, well, we've got all this scaremongering stuff again coming up. We won't know. And the main thing, what I've been bashing your ears for the last couple of years, the main problem is going to be if the UK, we're trying to get my hold of, just say we're calling an end to the negotiations because they're not going anywhere. And then French farmers and German industrialists are going to be having all their businesses interfered with by bloody bureaucrats. We've always seen the FDP, who is a kingmaker in Germany, saying that they're being far too tough and far too stupid because we've got free trade agreements in Europe, with the EU, which are far less beneficial than a free trade agreement with Europe. So it's pure spite. I'd be wondering when Barnier finishes up with several hundred tons of manure stuck on his doorstep by the French farmers. And in all my lifetime, I've never known a government stand up to the French farmers and to a lesser degree to Germans. But the German auto industry has been very quiet on the EU and the UK because they know they've got a huge domestic market here, which they can fill that rather than export their cars. I mean, we import nearly a million more cars than we export to Europe. So there's a huge domestic market for the automakers to fill in here in the UK. And the same with the components. We import the components. There's a very good chance now they'll be much cheaper if they build them in the UK when it happens. But primarily, to me, it's the actual people who produce things are going to call the tune eventually. And that's going to be the problem. And with these chlorinated chickens, it's not a question of safety because chlorinated chickens, has been proven, is much safer than ours. It's a question of husbandry of the animal, whether we want the animals brought up in a much better way than perhaps they do in America. I don't know, but I think we have our problems with husbandry right the way through Europe anyway. that's basically it. Sorry, lads.
Several points there. Thank you for that for the call. Thanks very much for the call in there, John. 952-78-4000. Well, anybody want to come on and end of the various points raised by both Sharon and John? Nathan.
Well, I mean, the whole chicken deal, yes, it's not just a safety issue, but it's regulations of, again, the husbandry, as he said. The rules are different, and you can spread this to, you know, practically any item that one country would want to trade with another. I mean, different countries, for various reasons, come up with different ways, different rules of how things are done, and the more you want to trade and the more you want to reach an agreement that basically turns it into a free trade agreement. That's what everybody would like, is that there's no penalty for selling whatever I make in any country. That's the best way to do it. But it just doesn't happen because a lot of times regulations are different and countries are protecting their own manufacturers, farmers, producers of whatever is being traded. And it's a negotiation, and they're just very, very complicated. And the idea that, oh, we'll just quickly do trade deals with all these countries, I think is a mistaken idea. I don't think it's going to be quick, and I don't think it's going to be easy.
Quick and easy, yes?
Yeah, the whole concept of the EU trading and free movement is just going to disappear completely. And this is something that we don't speak about enough, you know. It's taken lightly, but the whole free movement and the whole being in the EU has disadvantages, the many advantages. That's why, you know, some of the top economic countries in the European are pioneers and are the main countries within that union. And getting away from that will have an impact, tremendous impact, on everyday utility bills, everyday produce. And, you know, every country looks after their GDP. Importing or exporting products outside the EU has a tremendous cost.
I don't think the British public who voted for Brexit have really thought this through at all, and I think that's been proven over and over again. And on every issue being so complex, and how much it's going to cost the UK economically for quite a long time in the future.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Jack, I think it's hilarious, the desperation of the people that believe they're even going so far as to justify low-quality food as absolutely fine food that's being banned from the EU. They're that desperate to justify the possible a trade deal that would involve perhaps a trade-off against food standards. It's hilarious. Everybody that's not got their fingers in their ears and their eyes closed going la, 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 can actually see that the whole thing is a disastrous idea. I do not think they'll be around there because it would be terrible, the establishment, for them to turn around and admit they're wrong. I think it's not going to happen, but just carry on regardless, as they used to say with the old Carry On films. The whole thing is a shambles, and it's not even really started yet. And basically, I'd like to see the people that voted for this be the ones that actually sort it out for the rest of the British people. There you go. Yeah, thanks, Giles.
Thanks very much for calling. A bit of a bad line.
Bye-bye.
Yes, you want to come back to that point there?
Yeah, just going back to what Nathan was mentioning before about, you know, the trade deal. It's America first and then UK, but it's totally that. Now that the UK is in a more fragile position, especially towards and the eyes of the US. Now, you know, complications with the EU means that the US is forcing deals. It's going to force for their interest, for their growth of GDP, because they're cornering the UK, saying, "Listen, now you won't be able to have free trade with the EU, which means it's going to cost you money anyway. Now we're going to be your allies. We're going to, you know, take care of you. Buy this much from us. We'll buy this much from you. But we'll tell you what you buy from us." And then we come back to that product.
Of course they're going to pressure them. I mean, Americans are pretty tough negotiators, and Trump's sounding already as if he's being benevolent and we'll be first in the queue and, you know, like, we'll look after you. No. We know very well he'll look after himself. But everybody else is going to be queuing up too, New Zealand, Australia, India. Everybody.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE.
All right, I'll see you. Bye, lovies.
Okay, fair enough. We've got another call on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, I'm Trevor from North Carolina. Sorry, not North Carolina. North Costa Blanca.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say that, you know, despite what everybody says, it's my experience of international business, the business is business. And if that means that the French farmers, who are the biggest recipient of the European Common Farming Policy, and their biggest client is the UK, need to go against the rules of the EU, as an earlier caller said, you know, nobody's going to go against the French farmers. They're so strong. So I think that just at the end of the day, the biggest thing is probably getting some of the rules right. But business is business, and the UK will flourish because it will be independent of the rules that everybody else has to follow. That's just my point. Thank you.
Thank you for your calling. We've got another caller on the line. I thought we might be busy on this one. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Felix again. The issue of the EU, one of the main issues has been continually overlooked, that it is a cartel, a trade cartel, and that this cartel has actually ruined Africa, because people in Africa have not been able to develop their produce and introduce it into Europe without huge tariffs being stuck on top of it. And this is one of the things that so-called socialists never talk about. I find that very strange. And the second thing to complete on is free passage of people within the EU is a fair idea, okay? But they haven't been able to defend the European borders. So what is called free passage of people of Europe throughout Europe has been transformed into free passage of tens and eventually hundreds of millions of people from Africa, Asia, many of the Muslims who pursue a form of ideology called Sharia law, which is in complete contradiction to old habeas corpus and all British law that I know of.
Thank you very much for your call in. We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, sorry, it's John from Islington again.
Yes,
sorry.
John.
Just to say that people should remember, I can generally say couldn't care less whether we stay in or we go out. I'm almost switching now to rather stay in, because I travel to Europe quite a bit, and it's going to be no handicap for me. But we've got to remember that the EU isn't even half of Europe. So what the hell is the rest of the world doing, not being able to trade with Europe? They trade on a WTO basis, TO basis, and get on with it quite well. It'd be a bit of a hassle if we have to go that way, but it could go that way. And that's when I say that the French farmers and industrialists, the people who account, they start losing out. But effectively also, that, you know, Europe isn't even a union anymore. We have four countries, Poland, well, four or five countries now are sort of rebelling against the European Union. And there's also been a major change, but on a rainy day in here, boringly, I listened to the EU tax inquiry, where Juncker came under the most horrific pressure. And I think the Parliament is getting fed up with the Commission ruling, but European Parliament has very little power. And I think that's changing, and particularly, which nobody's mentioned, which I've been giving your ears for batching, the ICIJ with the Panama Papers. You've just had the Pakistan Prime Minister fall. You've had the Iceland Prime Minister fall. You're going to have the Maltese Prime Minister fall. We had the Spanish guy fall on the IP. And there's going to be far, far more coming out on that, which will show just how Europe is going to really rebel against all the tax-free deals from the multinationals, which really is non-political. I think every political party is totally fed up with all the multinationals getting away with it and doing pay and bugger all. And I think times are going to change there, and Europe's going to have to change. And I think the first one will be, you know, get rid of Verhofstadt and get rid of Juncker. And I still think that Nigel Farage will still be in the EU when Juncker and Verhofstadt are gone. And Barnier himself is putting most ridiculous conditions on, where I can understand if the UK says, we're just going to walk away. Then we'll see what happens.
I'm looking forward to listening to perhaps that podcast with the EU tax laws. I think that would be an excellent one to help me drift off of an evening there, John.
Well, the German Greens gave Juncker a hell of a bashing. And he actually apologised and said, look what I'm doing now than what I've done in the past, almost wiping himself clean, whereas he was the finance minister, the prime minister. We've got 500,000 Luxembourg people doing extremely well out of giving the multinational zero tax facilities. It's a joke. A total and utter joke, whether you're a socialist or extreme right wing. Everybody hates it.
Thank you very much for your call in there. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio at Talk Radio Europe, is the email. Roz, you're going to make a point there.
No, I think it's very sad if Farage is going to be the only one left. I think John gave us a very sad story.
Indeed. Yeah, do you want to come back on some of the points for the trade there, the trade was concerned?
No, just finally, because, I mean, he mentioned, I think it was John now, mentioned business is, you know, is business, but business, you know, margins, it's all about margins, you know, and if margins are minimum due to increased cost of production, of labor, of transportation, then business is not good business. So, you know, that's what's going to happen.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning, Sharon Alicante. It's amazing some of these sweeping generalisations. Africa has been ruined by the European Union. I don't think so. Africa was ruined by colonisation and some of the big companies that the UK are very much involved with, mining companies and all those sorts of things, are ruining their environment. So, you know, UK has been in the EU for 40 years and it's just as culpable as any other EU country. And by the way, John, the EU doesn't, it isn't the countries that are in the EU on the continent of Europe are, it does take up most of the European countries. You can't say that it's only half of Europe that's in the European Union. It's rubbish. Really, you know, if you're going to make sweeping statements, at least make them true. So colonisation and us for the Panama Papers and tax evasion, bankers, London, Wall Street, loads of Conservative MPs are very good. Wasn't it Cameron who set up the biggest tax evasion scheme in the UK with HSBC and his daddy, and God knows how many other schemes he set up? Yeah, I really don't think we can blame this on the EU. It's an international thing. And you did mention the Pakistani Prime Minister. He's not in the EU, and a few others. And yet it's Spain is included. It's in the EU. But it's an international problem. It isn't an EU problem. For God's sake, wake up. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. As forthright as always. Rosalind, you were nodding your head to that one. Yeah, do you want to come back on that point as well?
No, I mean, I certainly like her energy, and she made some fair points.
Okay, we've got another caller on the line. It was busy on the phones this morning. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, it's John again, so I just reply. I totally agree with Sharon regarding all our British colonies, and this is going to come out with the Panama Papers. You've got 11.5 million papers. Germany's just bought them. That's going to come out. It's starting to come out. Of course we're as guilty as anybody. America's as guilty as anybody. In fact, Europe, we're going to declare America as a tax evader. And by Delaware, it probably is. But regarding Africa, you bring in Africa, what's happened? We've put billions into Africa, which will, if the EU gets out, we'll be able to deal with Africa. And yet we put colossal tariffs on Africa, poor old Africa, for their exports to us. 40% of the budget, the EU budget, is on the CAP. And actually, Sharon, I think you'll find that the EU is less than half of the total of Europe. But that's by the by. It doesn't really matter anyway.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, John. We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Phones are busy. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Mr. Brown, everyone. Raymond from Mallorca.
Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning. I didn't phone last week. Right, what it is, I've said it before, and I don't want to bore you and say it again. I believe we'll leave the EU as we'll still have the free trade agreement. I'm convinced of that. Some of it's been gone into on the programme this morning. We have forgotten Spain, yeah? We live in Spain. Spain is one of the big exporters to the UK, very big, really big, and not just vegetables and fruit and wine. And we've got Italy as well. So Italy, Spain, France and Germany are the big four. They stand to lose a lot of profit, obviously. We are consumers and we purchase. They produce and they sell. So obviously it's very convenient for them. The market is on their doorstep. It's convenient for us because we're nowhere near self-sufficient in food production. So we depend on food from foreign countries. So the present arrangement suits everyone perfectly. And that's why I think we will reach an agreement very shortly, actually. I think we'll obviously have to wait until after the German general election in September. Nothing will be done until then, but after then, I think we'll reach an agreement with the EU negotiating team, and we will leave the European Union as planned, this date will not be changed. The European Union stated quite categorically, publicly, recently, that the Brexit date is a given. It will not be changed. I don't know, understand this with transitional periods, but I do know on the morning of the 30th of March 2019, we will wake up as non-EU citizens. We will no longer have the right to live in the EU. It will be at the discretion of the member states.
Raymond, yeah, okay. Thank you for that as always. We've got another caller on the line, busy this morning. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Steve from Cordoba.
Okay, good morning, Steve.
Yeah, good morning, right. I know I bang on a little bit about the same old thing, but I did mention or use the term last week, the weapons of mass destruction for this Brexit. It's, for me, it's surprising that no one's actually commented, or there's no great discussion regarding the fact that we don't really know what we're going to get. I mean, as I've said before, it looks like we're coming out, and you know that I'm not very happy about it. But the fact is that nobody seems to know what we're going to get. Now, some people may argue that we're in negotiations, but clearly, businesses, nothing can get anything. Nobody can get anything done at this moment in time until they know how they're going to stand. And you can't expect a multinational company to wait until the last minute to find out what the government's negotiated. The government clearly don't know what they're going to do themselves. So how can people prepare for something when they don't know what they're going to have? There should be some sort of clear outline, and it just goes to show that this whole exercise is a mistake, and that I'm going to put the phone down. I just want to hear what the people on the panel say, because, as I said, it just seems to be a disgrace. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Seems to be a disgrace. I've got one more caller on the line. We have been busy. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Paul, the Costa Blanca.
Yes, Paul.
I mean, this Europe thing about dealing with Europe, I thought when we belonged to Europe, stuff that was produced in Europe was sold in Europe. You go into any of the supermarkets, certainly up here in the Costa Blanca, you can't find a Spanish orange. They're all coming from all non-European countries. There's a place up here, a big dump up here, where they're dumping tons and tons of lemons because the farmers would rather dump them than what they get for them. Yet you go into a supermarket and you pay a God knows what price for a lemon that comes from halfway around the world. So I can't understand what this Europe thing is all about.
Well, when life gives you lemons, Paul, put them in a dump somewhere in the Costa Blanca. We've got another caller on the line. Caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint?
James from Worth. Yeah, I was just listening. I've just come on. I don't know what the viewpoint is you're talking about at the moment, but bent bananas and straight cucumbers and lemons, which are being dumped, which I just heard, seems absurd to me, because they're what the British supermarkets don't want, yeah? To make a higher standard of quality of lemon on their shelf, when you've seen, in Spain, you don't see the same quality of lemon on the market or as you see in Britain. But obviously, the other thing is, I've forgotten what I was going to say. About the exit. Why are we waiting to see why are we scared of what Europe's going to say to us when we could tell Europe what we're going to do with them? What's this Brexit? We're scared of Brexit? Are we scared? Or why don't we tell them what we're going to do with them and then wait for us to receive? Because I live here in Spain as well. So, you know, I'm not concerned. Let's see. Why don't we wait to see? Why are we? Let's say Winston Churchill wouldn't have said all this. We're fighting on the beaches.
Right. Okay. Well, probably with lemons, I would imagine. But thank you for your call in there, James. Ross, you want to come back on that point?
Well, I think because the UK is not decided as to what, there's no agreement, so they can't just start telling the EU what they're going to do, because they don't know. There's no agreement. As far as the local produce, being a vegetarian, I eat local fruit and vegetables all the time, and it's all local, I assure you. If you want to, you can pay more and get bananas from the Canaries, I think, but you don't have to.
As Winston Churchill may have said, come and have a go if EU think you're hard enough.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with the panel. Joining me live in the studio, Yaz Agar, Rosalind Scott-Gibb and Nathan Thomas. 952, the phone number, studio at talkradioeurope.com, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. We'll take this call quickly before I go to the panel. Caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, hi, John from Islington. I promise it's my last call.
Okay.
I don't want Sharon putting a contract on me. And also, I'm going to have coffee with my beautiful European girls to look after me. But one point I always forget to make, which I think is important, which I was very anti in the past, we all forget that the UK has virtually sold a huge amount of its industry and its businesses, i.e. the railways, virtually everything we've sold to European companies. If we're going to suffer, they're going to suffer, and they're going to come at the equation too, that effectively punishing the UK is punishing vast amounts of businesses which are owned by European, and we basically sold out, i.e. with the European car makers, over 60% of the exports of our cars produced in the UK to Europe are produced by Renault and BMW. So they're not going to be very happy when they're going to be charged a 10% import tax for the cars they produce in the UK. That's why I think they'll build up a big domestic industry. But it's not a point. To me, it was a weakness, but now it's become a bit of a strength, because so much of our industry and most of our areas are owned by European companies. So they're going to have to, when it comes down to business, they're going to have to stick together. I think eventually they will. We will get a free trade agreement. It may well mean that we have to just get out of the negotiations and call it a day and then see what happens from there.
Thank you for your call.
That's it, Sharon. Sorry about that. Thank
you for your call in, John. Ross, can we come back on a point there?
Well, no, just the basic point that the EU cannot make it beneficial, favourable, easy, comfortable for the UK to get out. They just can't. It just doesn't make sense, because then they'll be flying out of the doors. So I don't think that's going to happen. I simply don't. They've got to make it difficult, as difficult as possible.
We've got another caller on the line, busy on the phones again this morning. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Raymond from New York. I'll be brief. I give the last caller my full support on what he just said, but it's a bit worse than that. A gentleman phoned in and said, fight them on the beaches. The trouble is, you see, we are not self-sufficient in weapon production. We've just done a deal with the Spanish to buy 6 aircraft from them and spare parts for the Eurofighters. The new armoured vehicle for the British Army is being built in Spain by a company you may have heard of. It's called Saab. The Swedish. Oh, and by the way, Sweden is a full member of the European Union. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you there, Raymond. I don't think anybody's fighting anybody on the beaches, even with cast-off lemons. Let's go to the panel for some levity. I think, Nathan, your thoughts on what we've heard over the past couple of things.
I mean, one, Steve was talking about, you know, kind of why can't they just tell us what's going to happen, which has been the cry since long before the referendum. But so many people seem to have it in their mind that somebody somewhere knows the answer to all of this and is just keeping it secret and can't accept the idea that no one can tell you what's going to happen, because there is not one person anywhere that knows what's going to happen. It's all got to be worked out, and it will be, and I think what will happen is consumers, individuals, when you get down to it, will have a little rougher time. They will probably be paying in some areas more for whatever they buy, whether they're Europeans living in Europe or whether they're people in the UK. But trade will continue. It's just going to cost a little more here, maybe a little less there, and it will all work itself out, but nobody knows how. It's all trial and error.
All trial and error. We go to the phones again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
No, it's Mo from Mayhouse.
Good morning, Mo.
Pueblo. It is a facetious comment that I want to say, but it is to do with the idea of economics. Zapatero, our prime minister, was asked, how much is a cup of coffee? And he said 70 cents. And the interviewer said, where on earth do you get a cup of coffee for 70 cents? He went, oh, the Alimento. Everything is subsidized.
Yes.
And I thought, doesn't that put that into perspective, that the people who are making the decisions about our economic lives do not actually live in the real world?
Thank you, Mo, for that. Thank you, Mo, for that.
There we go. Sorry about that.
It's quite all right. No problem at all. Former Prime Minister Zapatero making comment about a cup of coffee. Coffee con leche always been an interesting subject in Spain. Who can forget Madrid mayor's Ana Botín's statement about a relaxing cup of coffee that lost her the Olympics? Right then, Nathan.
Well, it's true what she said, and it's true around the world. I mean, the people who are working in government very often have a deal that they don't live like normal people. It's a fact. They make the rules for normal people, but they don't. And they don't know things like what a cup of coffee costs, what a quart of milk costs, or a liter of milk or whatever. It's a reality, and you just kind of have to deal with it because you're not going to change it.
Having said that, of course, there have been figures out this week that said that Spain is actually coming out of depression and the recovery is beginning. Yaz, you made some comments about that earlier.
Yeah, no, according to some reliable sources and yesterday and discussing with other people who are into this business, mentioned that, yeah, the Spain is officially out of the crisis. Obviously, it's summer. Figures are more positive at this point, but it's gone down. Inflation's gone down from approximately, it was around the 21% mark, and it's now below 20, which is something positive, and is good for the GDP of the country, and it's good for, it's a good place to be for Spain right now, you know.
Well, unemployment obviously does go down during the tourist months, during the summer months, and then, of course, it goes back up. But we are in a far better position as far as tourists are concerned, increasingly, as we become one of the few really attractive but also very safe destinations. I hope I don't speak too soon. To go, and that's obviously to our benefit. There's more stability here than many other countries.
Indeed, indeed. Take a short break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeed. Into the last 11 minutes or so of what's been a very entertaining, very engaging Viewpoint today. We're going to get away from Brexit. We're going to get away from Trump. We're going to get away from UK trade deals. And we're going to focus on a story that's going to, I think, as this month progresses and the anniversary of her death, the 20th anniversary of her death, comes closer. It's the 31st of August this month. We are on the 1st of August. Diana, Princess of Wales, who was killed in a car crash in a Paris tunnel 20 years ago this month. The UK papers, several of the UK papers are running her photograph on the front page, mainly about the Diana tapes. These are private tapes, I believe, public tapes made by Diana, Princess of Wales. Should these tapes be aired, Nathan? Do we think they are in the public interest? A lot of the papers are saying they should be kept under wraps. Channel 4 is coming under increasing pressure and flack from other media outlets because of the decision to air these tapes.
And Channel 4, the day they air them, will have ratings that, you know, will rival most anything. The tapes exist. They were made. They've been shown on television in the United States in 2004. Apparently not all of them that will be shown this time, but they're there. Is it a very nice thing to do? Probably not. People who are aware of what's on them have said nobody's going to learn anything really new. But if you go through people in the world who fascinate the general public, she is, if not at the top, right up there. And like you said, you put her picture on a newspaper or magazine cover, it sells a whole lot more than if you have somebody else's picture on it. It is a commercial decision, and there it is. I cannot understand why anyone would make tapes like that and assume that they were never going to get out. I don't know whether she assumed that someday they would get out or not. Yes, they were private, but boy, once it's on videotape or once it's on, you know, or on the internet now, and I mean, you're talking about a time before that was realistic, but to assume that it's going to be private unless you take it out of the camera and destroy it immediately – somebody's got to get it somewhere. And if you are somebody who is of interest to the public, is it in the public interest? This, you know, the phrase depends how you interpret the phrase. Is it in the public interest? Is it going to do the public any real beneficial good to hear these things? Probably not. But is the public going to be interested in it? Oh, yes.
Ross, your thoughts on this?
Well, I was never a fan of Lady Di, and I think she was a deeply disturbed woman who did a great deal of harm to the monarchy. And I'm really against any promotion of her. And I wouldn't even be surprised if she knew that that they weren't that private. I don't know, but I see nothing to be gained by broadcasting these tapes, actually. I'm actually against it.
Well, what's to be gained is money.
Exactly.
I mean, the newspaper. Well, that's the reason. The newspapers making money.
If the question had been asked, will they make money, then that's obviously they will. But should they be for any other reason? Is it a benefit to society, to the individuals, to the family, to the royal family, to her children? Then I think not.
I mean, a commercial television station or a commercial newspaper, they aren't doing things to benefit the public. They are doing things to make money.
This information is quite funny and interesting, but you know, it comes out at a point, at a moment in the year where there's a lot of uncertainties and a lot of question marks happening right now in the UK. You know, is this maybe a decoy as well to change the, you know, to take people's mind off things? Because this, like you say, is.
Those of us who have worked in the media for years will know that this time of year, I mean, obviously we have a bit of change here, having President Trump and Brexit going on, but normally this is what we call the silly season. This is what journalists go, oh, right, we're going to have to find, you know, ducks who can, you know, sing in Spanish to make this debate. Exactly. But it's interesting because you look at other front pages, and I think we're going to get more and more of this as this month goes on. How Diana made swimsuit sexy, her dazzling style legacy pullout. So we're going to, you know, but on one hand, people are saying we must protect, you know, the Harry and William from this, and it's such a sad thing. On the other, you've got the front page of a UK National with a picture of Diana in a swimsuit with one leg behind her. Let me rephrase that. But and it's, you know, how Diana made swimsuit sexy. Ross, you have the look of somebody who just isn't concerned at all about this.
One of those lemons.
Well, I'm kind of horrified. You know, I mean, just milking it for everything you can. It doesn't. It certainly. Is that a catty remark?
No, no, because you said milk, and I just thought of.
Let's not go into that. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it doesn't do the press any favors. Okay, it's commercialism.
Indeed, but as we said, I mean, even during her lifetime, I think it was the editor of Vogue when they put the Mario Testino photographs on the front cover of those iconic black and white pictures of Vogue. I think they sold, it was something like three times as many Vogue as they'd ever done in their history. So even 20 years after her passing, she can still shift newspapers. And as I said before, I mean, you made the very interesting mark. These tapes were done before the internet. I mean, imagine if we've seen the interesting tweets that Trump has come out with. Imagine if the Diana, Princess of Wales, had her own Twitter feed. It would be make engaging reading, to put it mildly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the timing of the whole thing, and obviously, as you say, it's coming out in August, just because that, you know, is the date that, you know, that she was killed. So that the anniversary comes up and everything surrounds it. I mean, in the States, the same thing with Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination. I mean, something comes out on that, and it's the same idea. I mean, people will look at it, whether they, you know, whatever they feel about it, the public fascination is there. And the public fascination with Diana, I don't think there is any question that it is there. Love her, hate her, whatever, people will read about it.
She certainly was a master at manipulating the media.
Well, she was media savvy, and she knew how to give the doe-eyed look to camera, perhaps.
Well, she...
I'm not sure she manipulated them. I'm not sure there was a point.
Absolutely. I think she absolutely manipulated them.
To what end?
To bring as much harm to the royal family, to make herself, build herself up.
She was great at marketing herself.
She was great at
marketing. That's what it was.
And putting the royal family down.
Indeed. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio at talkradio.com, the email.
BBC World Service with media partner, Talk Radio Europe.
When America goes to sleep, people on the other side of the world are waking up.
This is World Update. I'm Dan Damon. You're listening to the BBC World Service.
The BBC keeps you connected to the world.
It's 10 minutes past 8.
And we'll speak to our correspondent in Berlin in just a few minutes' time.
There is no food, there is no medical. Lots of people are injured, and we ask international community to intervene.
So there may be a view in the US that, look, this consensus is in danger of falling apart or being too disparate.
On the markets at the moment, the FTSE 100 is down more than 0.5%. This is the BBC.
Presenting the BBC World Service on Talk Radio Europe. Overnight, every night.
Europe Today.
Reporting from across the region and the world.
We must lift the uncertainty caused by Brexit.
Europe Today.
In the first step, we will deal with the most pressing issues, citizen rights, the single financial settlement, and other separation issues.
Stephen Ritson.
Now we have a shared responsibility to deliver quick and substantive progress.
Weekdays at midday.
There's a long way to go, but we're off to a promising start.
What brought you to live in Spain? What did you do before moving here? And what has life been like for you as a resident in this country? These are just a few of the things I'll be finding out from my guests in my new programme,
Life Stories,
presented by Ian Rutter.
Join me and my guest on Saturday at midday and Sunday at 1 p.m. for Life Stories.
Once upon a time, there was a little boy who saw an emperor walking past his house.
He's got no clothes on.
Did you ever wonder what happened to that little boy?
Well, I grew up to be Mr. Grumpy. I expose modern life in my own way.
I download the Tor browser.
Oh, my goodness.
So that I don't know when I want to go to Gatwick.
Join me, Mr. Grumpy, and Bill Padley on Let's Talk every other Friday.
It's extreme, but I get it's getting on my nerves.
Listen to Giles Brown on Viewpoint on the email studio at talkradio.com to your female guest. This is from Daniel. Diana damaged the monarchy? Yes, maybe she did, but that was after she was used, abused, and spat out by them. And let's not go into the circumstances of her death. That's from Daniel. Studio at talkradioeurope.com. But we are. What, did you want to make a response to that one, Rosalind?
Well, I actually think, Diana, I understand what he's saying, but Diana must have known what she was doing marrying into the English monarchy. She must have known. She should have been informed by her family. She didn't grew up in a sort of an upper class family. They would have known about the British monarchy. She should have been warned off and not gotten bold.
I was about to correct you about the English monarchy. I don't think we've had an English monarchy since the Wars of the Roses,
British monarchy. British monarchy.
Just going to take a quick of the Welsh monarchy.
The Scots sort of disown themselves at times.
Don't even go there. Right then, we've got a caller on the, line just quickly. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Giles.
Good morning, Hans. Quickly.
Very quickly. 20 years ago, I used to manage a hotel in Kenya. My girlfriend was German. As you know, I'm Austrian. Most of my customers were Swiss and Germans and Italians and French. And when we got the news that Lady Di died, the whole hotel in Kenya was depressed. I saw people crying from all kind of nationalities.
And we're running out of time. I'm sorry, Hans. I knew that was going to be quick. Right, thanks to my guests. First time to Yas Agha. Thank you, Yas.
Thank you. It was great. Great pleasure.
And Ross and Scott.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you.
And, of course, Nathan Thomas.
Thank you. It was great fun.
This program will be repeated on 6 o'clock today. Stephen Ritson is up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.